Hello, friends. It's time to drop the needle on another episode of Supersonic Chat. This is the music podcast full of debate, jousts, thought experiments, all done in the name of entertainment. My name is Adrian Warhope.
And my name's Leon Leroux. Adrian, as the keeper of the questions and the crafter of the conundrums for this fundamental service that we provide our diligent listeners, what lesson plans have you carefully constructed in your teacher diary for the students of a generation too young to know today's topic? And for those out there who are finally aged as us, what potential hearty staff room debates can you generate today, my fine colleague?
Well, once again, Leon, we provide a vital community service. Leon, there are people out there, teenagers, kids going through musical puberty, just developing taste what their TikTok feed has soundtracked to the latest funny cat video, and they're discovering amazing bands.
Yes.
And so you and I tackle the challenge of introducing a great band by selecting the best five songs that will pique the interest of the first-time listener, whilst giving a general summary of what the band is all about. And that's what we're going to tackle today.
Again, this is not the best five of our personal tastes, but our best five for introducing a non-initiated listener, as we have done multiple times before.
That's right. We did a Primus Primer. We did Primus in five. Yeah. We selected Soundgarden's Type 5. Oh, we also looked at Queens of the Stone Age and Radiohead.
We've done this for each other and found that the process works. It is actually fun to get these five songs from somebody else and go, yeah, that does give me a good sense of what this band is like.
Once we turned the lens on each other, do you remember those artists?
Yeah, like Tame Impala and Tom Waits, for example. Yep.
And Beirut and Bahamas was the other one.
Yeah, just recently. Yeah.
It was great. And you're right, these are not our personal favorites. These aren't the ones that we think are the best songs that this artist or band has put out. These are just the five that represent the first-time listener. And today, we tackle the question, how do you distill a band as chaotic, varied, and nuanced as Faith No More down to just five songs?
Faith No More. Holy moly, first, what a
quick
band.
Intro. Absolutely. Faith No More, they formed in the Bay Area of San Francisco in the early 80s. And it really formed around the trio of bass player Billy Gould, drummer Mike Borden, and keyboardist Roddy Bottom, who are like the strong through line of the band.
Such a good name.
They are the strong through line, the core of the band. And together they lay the bedrock of the band sound, which is like really an explosion of alternative sounds. It's rock, it's metal, it's funk, it's rap, it's atmospheric noise, it's chaos.
And we'll dive in
more of that. You know, and they had some guitarists that cycled through. Jim Martin was the guy. He of Bright Red Glasses fame. He kind of lasted their core early albums, and then they cycled through a few different ones. Trace Bruance from Mr. Bungle played a little bit, but then John Hudson was the guy who lasted a few albums. And initially
I didn't realize Trace Bruance had played with those guys.
Yeah, I don't remember if he recorded on one of the albums or toured one, but he played one small part in the interim as they changed through. They had this little rotating early cast of lead singers, and they eventually landed on a guy called Chuck Mosley as their first permanent singer. Did a couple of albums, the semi-indie We Care a Lot in 1985 and Introduce Yourself in 1987. But then what I like to think of as the golden period of Faith No More came.
Yeah. And what I like to think of is the only period.
Yeah. Yeah. because Chuck was fired. He was unreliable. And I think unreliable means he liked
on drugs.
He liked to party. And he was fired. And a young Mike Patton became the lead singer, who was sort of similar enough to Chuck, but had enough talent and artistic vision to really hone Faith No More into this creative juggernaut and lift them into superstardom, his vocal ability that fits seamlessly between crooning and screaming and rapping and scatting and doing whatever.
But he just brought so much more flavors and so many more dimensions to this band that just weren't with the previous vocalist. And I tell you, man, I have been wanting to talk about this band so much on this podcast, but I tend to avoid it a little bit because I'm maybe too much of a Mike Patton fanboy and wanted to ensure that I didn't overdo it. But to me, this band was a formative influence on me as a teenager and as an early 20s gentleman.
Me too. You know, Patton is the guy who has the delivery, the tone, and the range and the control. He's not all power. Yeah. He's subtlety.
Yes, absolutely.
And he's truly one of the great frontmen of the 90s and probably one of the great frontmen of all time, given the myriad of different projects that he's delivered.
And I love the different textures that Patton brings to it as well. He doesn't just try and always kind of bust out his amazing singing chops. Sometimes he'll growl a little bit and sometimes he'll kind of slur his words a bit, and sometimes he'll rap, and sometimes he'll go, like you're saying, super quiet, and sometimes he'll just explode and scream, and it's just everything over the top of this band. And the band matches it too. I think the band brings, they're not afraid to be quiet for a little while, and they're not afraid to do soft sort of cruisy songs right next to big explosive songs. It's just a real synergy.
Yeah, absolutely. And just following on the quick intro, you know, the breakout album came when they released The Real Thing in 1989. Can't believe it, 1989. And that charted around the world, like top 40, not alternative rock charts, like top 40, like it charted. It was number two in Australia.
Now, I remember an ad campaign in Australia, and I remember being a bit shocked as a little 9 or 10 year old, because there was this ad campaign, and I think it was only on like maybe 1 or 2 days in a row, and it said, "Forget the other shit, this is the real thing." And I was like, what? Somehow they got the swear word over the air.
Really?
And I don't know how they did it. Yeah, I saw this, and I never saw or heard anything more of this ad again, but I saw it a day, and I was shocked as a little kiddie, and I'm surprised there wasn't like a big media circus around I heard that said on an ad on primetime telly, and went whoa. You can't, and I asked my parents, you can't say that on an ad, can you? And they're like, no, you can't.
Right. And then there's no such thing as bad publicity. Pulls the ad, people get talking about it. Anywho, you know, that was the first of what I call the core canon of albums. The Real Thing, then Angel Dust in 1992, King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime in 1995, and Album of the Year in 1997. There was a hiatus, a breakup before a reunion tour, and there was an album, Soul Invictus, in 2015.
Yes.
You know, and Patton's prolific involvement in myriad of successful projects meant he never really left the alt-rock zeitgeist.
Totally true. Yeah. Although it's, you know, he's evolved a lot over the years. But, you know, Faith No More went through such a massive transition over the years and had a real spectrum of different kinds of music. And within my choices, I have left out Soul Invictus out of my choices, because it just didn't grab me.
Me too. It was good. It was good, not great. Or it didn't form canon. It's like Primus's later albums, which were good, but don't form canon. Yeah. I don't think. Or they don't form the core canon. They are canon, but they don't form the core canon.
Yeah. And it's not the best thing to introduce a new listener to, at any rate.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which is the task challenge today.
Yep.
Look, the fact that Faith No More became big is a miracle. When you consider this, and big, I mean like top 40 charting, you know, superstars, the at the time when they blew up in 89, these are the bands that were big. So Poison was big. Think about Unskinny Bop. Hair Metal was big. Roxette, you know, was big. You know,
true.
Technotronic was big. Pump Up the Jam. Right? Okay, so that's top 40, right? That's top 40. But then think about the underground. The scenes you've got in America are, you've got hardcore punk like Black Flag and Circle Jerks. They're not really that band. There's alternative kind of like The Replacements and Husker Du, like that. They were, but that's not Faith No More. And then there was thrash metal. So Metallica were big. And Faith No More didn't fit in until they were in the Bay Area and in Los Angeles. This funk metal scene emerged. So you've got Primus in the Bay Area, you know, and then in Los Angeles, and there are other ones.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
In LA, you got Red Hot Chili Peppers and Fishbone. And it's just phenomenal in hindsight. You know, Faith No More hold down a spot as one of the most influential alternative rock bands of the 90s, and they have a special place in my heart. And I think as we go into now the five songs, trying to work out the five songs to introduce a new listener to, what my criteria is, you need equal parts kind of crooning groove. You need chaotic freakouts.
Yes.
You need hard rock.
Okay.
You need metal riffage.
Yes.
And you need kind of funk and rap with a healthy dose of big hooks and singable choruses.
Okay.
Where did you start?
We're going to converge pretty
well.
Where
did you start?
Okay, look, as we just previously said, if this was my top five, not a top five for an uninitiated listener, they'd actually probably all come from Angel Dust and King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. However, I've started with a song from The Real Thing, and the song that I've chosen is not epic, as some people would imagine. It's Falling to Pieces.
So good.
Because I'm
great song.
Yeah. And I chose this song because it was a hit. You know, people, it was quite successful.
Yes.
It's got a video clip and people knew it. And so our hypothetical person might have heard this somewhere before and it might spark a little familiarity, which is kind of why I thought I'd choose this first. And, you know, this kind of thing where it's like, oh, yeah, I know this song. Because I've had that experience heaps of times where I've been listening to an album and recognized a song that I'd previously overheard on the radio or something like that and instantly liked the band more because I could finally place the name of a band or a song that I'd heard all those years ago. And I was like,
oh, they're those
okay,
guys.
I think I love this band. Yes, exactly. And that's the experience I'm hoping to create by choosing this song first. And on that topic, I think probably Epic is a song that's probably more well known than Falling to Pieces. And I did consider it, but it's really rap heavy. And rap occurs at multiple times in different Faith No More albums. Pretty much at all albums, there's some rap that appears. But I wouldn't call it kind of like, I would say that the amount of rap that happens in Falling to Pieces is proportional to the amount of rap that happens in Faith No More. So I've chosen that one partly because of that. And so, but then it's also, it's got such a cool bass line.
Such a cool bass line.
Yeah. It's super good. Plus the melody's so interesting. Like the melody and the way that the song is constructed, you sort of, it always just keeps the song moving forward and moving forward. And it's just a really constantly interesting thing. It's not, it doesn't feel predictable, even though it's sort of, you know, more or less verse chorus kind of fairly predictable structure. It doesn't feel like, okay, now it's time for the chorus. It just naturally flows from one thing to the other. And the way that the melody goes is so interesting. And plus it's really good to have that sound that Mike Patton has in his vocals in that first album, in one of the choices of the songs. I think you kind of have to give a good sense of what this band is like. You have to include one from that album.
I agree. I love the big synth sound and I love, it's a big rock song. It's a big rock song. And I think Faith No More use the synth better than any rock band ever. Like,
so
I just think it's a really key thing for them. It's a big rock song with big hooks and big choruses. It's alternative and it has the bits where it slows down and stops after the chorus and then punches back in and it gallops again. Like it's a great song.
Where the whole band stops and you just hear Mike Patton going, "Somebody put me together." You know? And he's just by himself for a second just before the band hits it again and it's super good.
It's great.
Yeah, that song is super upbeat. It's a great one to start with because they do have a lot of other slow songs, but this one is like, oh, this is I think it sums up the kind of sound that Faith No More has. It's fun. It's got some really good lyrics as well, And I think it's just a super funky, approachable song that's not too over the top. It sort of fits within a catchy kind of a feel that most people would find appealing.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good gateway song.
No, I agree. My first one, I need your help on this because this is not one of my favorite songs, but it's so ubiquitous. It's so well known that they still play it live. And it's the only song that I've chosen that has Chuck Mosley as the singer. And this is the contentious part, right? So this is the big sort of song that got them initially on some people's maps, you know, on the map. And that is Care a Lot from Introduce Care Yourself in 87. And, you know, they've done three versions of the song. There was a sort of a more indie, sloppier one on the first more indie album. This one, which I think is tight and much brighter and better. And then there's a live version as well, an official live album that Patton sings. My thing on this is that it is a crucial song. Chuck does a serviceable job, right? He's not brilliant, but it's a serviceable job. You know, it captures the elements that make the band unique and great. So there is that funk thump of the bass that comes through.
Yeah, it's
it has
good.
This sporadic metal riffing that really rips, like really rips. And it has the atmospheric synth pads and then that kind of rap delivery. And it's that tongue-in-cheek thing where you think they're going, hey, we care a lot about this and that and da-da-da-da-da, and they list it all out. And it's kind of funny, but it's almost like a subversive tongue-in-cheek, you know, wink at the whole Live Aid, Save the World kind of thing. And as we enter into the 90s where there was that people just didn't care, movement. You know, were over the man. And
oh,
you know,
I see what you're saying. The ambivalence
of the 90s.
And it's like, whatever.
They were on the vanguard.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Reacting against that kind of Michael Jackson and
We Are the World.
Bob Geldof and all those guys getting together.
So, you know.
And it's like sure, nothing's ever going
to
change.
We care a lot. And then, of course, you sing along to the hooky chorus. It's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
It's great.
Speaks to the nature of the core trio, and it does speak to the nature that there is a rotating cast. You know, the lead singer and the guitarist. I don't know. This is the first one that I went. Okay. I can hang on to this. And does a new person need to hear Chuck Mosley? I don't know. You help me.
I don't think so. I think it's an objectively good song, but not. I just don't like Chuck Mosley's singing in it. Like, you hear, if you contrast how Mike Patton does it, even live, not in a studio recording where it's polished as hell, but in a live one, it's a slightly faster tempo, a bit more upbeat. It's he's a bit more staccato and like emotive.
I'm not arguing
that
Patton is better. Patton is hands down better. That Faith No More is a hands down better band with Patton in it. But if you're introducing someone to, do you introduce them to this big, hooky, simple, straight, early song? It's probably like my 50th favorite Faith No More song, but you know.
You're thinking maybe choose a live one to put it on.
I had a listen and I considered it and it's not. It doesn't help,
because I did consider putting a live song on the list because they're so good live.
But that's because you're a fan and you know the song already. Live is too chaotic, and
that's why I decided against it in the end.
So I don't know. I think in terms of this argument, here's the question: do you need a Chuck Mosley song in this five? Does a new person need to hear?
Nah.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I probably agree. When I think Faith No More, I think Mike Patton.
I don't think so. It's a great conversation to have because it's part of the history of the band. But I don't think that it's going to hook someone in, quite like hearing that incredible voice of Patton is going to hook someone
in. Falling
in.
To Pieces is a phenomenal song. It would be a phenomenal, and you're in order. Like, I think if that was the first song you played to someone, I think that's a really good gateway song. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my second song is perhaps diving in too hard, too fast, but I just love this song from the very second I heard it, and that is The Gentle Art of Making Enemies.
Yes. I love that song with all my heart and soul.
It might even be my favorite Faith No More song if I had to pick. But the riff of this one it's hard to beat. The riff is just so, it rocks so hard. And I love, and the dynamics of the guitars are super dirty, but then they're also melodic. And then they just bust into a little tight rock riff and then stop until there's just bass, hi-hat and vocals left as the verse comes in. And then one of my favorite lyrical sections, "Don't you look so surprised, happy birthday, fucker. You blow the candle out, we're going to kick you.
Don't tell you anything right because you are.
Explodes.
It's so good.
Yeah, right before it gets into the chorus. It's super good. And maybe the best birthday cake I ever made for our mutual friend Trent bore that inscription of happy birthday, fucker.
Gold.
And I went up to the shop assistant who didn't speak English really well. And I said, I'd like a cake that says happy birthday, fucker on it. And she was like, I don't get it. I don't
How
understand.
Do you spell that? Yeah.
But I wrote it down.
Good.
Yes, exactly. I wrote it down and it was beautiful. And so I played the song and gave him the cake. And my only regret is I didn't kick Trent when he blew his candle out. But there you go. So learn the gentle art of making enemies. Don't you look so surprised? Happy birthday, fucker. You blow that candle out, we're gonna kick you. Don't say you're not because you are. Don't say you're not because you are. It's a reason that you are.
Okay, here's my thing with that.
Anyway.
It's hard. It's going hard. It's a, because the lyrics are confronting, and it slaps you in the face and then goes back and forth, slapping you in the face like Three Stooges style.
Uh-huh.
And then kicks you in the balls just for fun. Like it's such a great song.
That's right.
But I have in my fifth. It was a contender for my fifth song. I don't have it in my five, but it was a contender for my fifth song when I wanted chaos and unbridled. You know, extreme kind of rock chaos that, and when we get to my fifth song, I'll be like, okay, would you put, it was either Gentle Art or the one that I'm going to talk about.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. All right. So we have to table it, I guess. Like, I mean, for me, this thing builds and builds so deliberately, and there's sort of this adversarial situation in the first part. And then the two lines repeated that create the conflict. Don't, you know, like what you said before, don't say you're not because you are. History tells us that you are. And then there's something that's like humorous, but also impactful about the lyrics. And so I think it's not as full on as some of their other songs. But there's musical catchiness to the song,
and
too,
a big chorus.
And that's sort of
big chorus with, and Patton does soar
exactly.
Like, so he
singing.
Goes from that that
exactly.
staccato gravel to soaring, uh-huh. and you're like, okay, genius. I would say
if
we include this in our five, I thought this would be the fifth song to be like, you know, as you think you've met the band, well, now meet this side of the band, and that's where I would put that.
All right. Okay. No, I'll let's table it then. Let's table it. We'll hear what you've got for your fifth one, and we'll balance it out on the scales of justice later.
My second one is Epic from The Real Thing from 1989. because this is, look, personally, this is where I was introduced to the band as a boy. It spent 3 weeks at number one on the ARIA charts. So you go into video hits on a Saturday and it was number one for 3 weeks and right there all the time. When I was allowed to pick out one cassette to go with my brand new Sony Walkman with Mega Bass Boost, I chose as a little kid, I chose The Real Thing. Only having heard that and seen that wild fever dream video clip, you know, the one with the eyeball in the hand and Patton's wild dancing with his USA boxing gloves and the green paint splatter and the fish flopping on the ground.
So good.
Yeah, like so good. So I just thought this song hits various styles that Faith No More become famous for, you know, rap, metal, funk. That soul kind of, soul isn't the right word, but that soaring, beautiful, big vocal. The sparse verse hits hard. The chorus soars. That's the gift of Patton. And it turns on a dime. You know, he turns on a dime from hard rap to soaring chorus. The arrangement is wild. It's not conventional. Because think about that delightful piano outro. So they have this synth kind of effect. And at the end, it's just this beautiful, upright piano outro that plays, that ends the video, and then of course the iconic upright piano explodes and we have a fish flopping on the ground. Can you feel it? See it? Hear it today. If you can't, then it doesn't matter anyway. You will never understand it because it happens to and it feels so good, it's like walking the glass. It's so cool, so hip, it's all right. It's so groovy, it's out of sight. You can touch it, smell it, taste it so sweet. But it makes no difference, cause it knocks you off your feet. You want it all, but you can't have. You know, and for this young guy, that dream song was my, you know, new favorite song from my new favorite band, shortly before Nirvana took that mantle, but that's another story for another time. Yeah. You know, it's
that's
it.
Another story.
What is it? It's it. And I just remember chanting that.
What is it?
I just think you can click. It's so strange and captivating and wonderful and engaging. And I think if you went from Falling to Pieces, which was the first single from that album, and Epic, which was the second single from that album, you've got like a 1-2 punch intro that just people will think they'll think they know what the band is, and then you start working through the other albums. That's my argument.
Yeah, maybe. Oof. You make a compelling argument there, mate. Because that is, I mean, that like again, like I said, I really considered that song to be first on the list. Yeah. So
the hard thing is, it is so ubiquitous.
It's gonna be tough,
right,
man. We're gonna have to keep tabling these, probably.
I think so.
Yes, exactly.
It's such a ubiquitous song, but I had to, and I don't listen to it much these days because I played it so much when I was a kid. But when I listened back to it in prep for this, I was reminded of what a fantastic song it is. But you're right. Let's table that. Let's table, like, I think we can agree number one is Falling to Pieces. Two, I argue Epic, but let's just see what else bubbles to the surface and we can work out the final list.
Okay, well.
What do you have for three?
The next thing bubbling to my surface then is Midlife Crisis.
Me too.
From their
me
second.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. Number three, Midlife Crisis.
Well, this is backtracking. Yeah. For me, this is backtracking chronologically, but for you, it's tracking chronologically so far. This song to me, it's got layers. It's got a real groove.
This
contemporary context. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's everything, every layer of it is just perfect. And there's, in a contemporary context now, there's something a little bit charmingly retro about it. It's got a bit of a retro sound, but it still sounds so fresh. Like the recording quality is of that whole album is incredible. Yeah. And like you were saying before, that synth that goes over the top of Faith No More is it feels like it belongs to the band. It doesn't feel like another layer that's sort of separate to the band. It feels like
intrinsic,
a natural part. Exactly. And so, and it's actually interesting about this album. I don't know what it is, but the whole album of Angel Dust feels like most of the songs, or a lot of the songs, have a theme about aging and becoming uncontrollably old. Like, In the lyrics, "Land in Land of Sunshine," do you feel that sometimes that age is against you, or does life seem worthwhile to you, or in varicose, comatose, senile, yeah. And the song RV sounds like a rambling, senile old yep. man, and kindergarten is about an old guy who's forever repeating kindergarten because he's so dumb. And you know, it's then this song is literally called Midlife Crisis. So I don't know what's going on there.
Interesting. Good aside. But why this one for a new person?
Mate, you're so good with keeping me on track.
I try.
This here, like, it feels to me like it's a perfect unity of instruments. Again, it's pretty catchy. I thought my thinking about it was that you'd bring somebody into the gentle art of making enemies and explode their brain, and you go, and let's pull it back a little bit and check this out, sort of thing. So you're like bringing it huge and then bringing it back a little bit and seeing how the band has really evolved since that first one. I mean, you don't necessarily need to know the chronology of each song, but you can hear the difference, say, between Falling to Pieces and Midlife Crisis, because that you can tell it's the same band that has just changed and evolved and developed over time. And I don't think you even necessarily need to know that one was after the other. You know, the keyboards are completely equal in the mix with every single thing. They're not just adding sort of tone over the top or anything like that. There's a really nice gruff beginning by Patton, followed by a nice bridge that shows richness in his voice before he busts out with that chorus. You're perfect. Yes, it's true. But without me, you're only you.
Yeah, it's so good. And then the lyrics, right? Awesome. Your lyrics. Your menstruating heart, it ain't bleeding enough for two. I just love that lyric. I just thought that is.
I know.
Wow. Woo.
It's really visceral. It's really visceral, and it paints a picture. Yeah.
Look, it opens with that gorgeous floating drum. It's just a drum opening, which was awesome. And then Patton weaves his magic right through the song, the rap delivery, the reserved guttural style, but then the big soaring, shining kind of chorus. It's magic. And I just think it is a hard rock track with this slight alt funk rock flavor, but it makes it a perfect intro to Faith No More for a new fan. I also think that it dives in and shows the lyrical prowess of Patton and how, you know, he's strange, but he's evocative and provocative.
Yes,
and that is a wonderful combination.
Yes.
Like the verse one says, go on and wring my neck like when a rag gets wet, a little discipline for my pet genius. My head is like lettuce. Go on, dig your thumbs in. You know, it's so visceral. So, you know, provocative and evocative. So anyway, we probably don't need to say any more other than to say it is the perfect median point here at the third position of five for the intro to Faith.
I agree.
What a song.
I agree. And like, and I wouldn't even call, like, you called it rap, but I wouldn't even call it rap. He's just, he's growling these lyrics, and it just feels like he's, I don't know, like acting or something.
Yeah. It's
really interesting way to deliver lyrics. I always found that there's like a really cinematic quality to the way that Mike Patton approaches vocal delivery, And like, it's just, and this, and in this song, there's just so many bits to it. It's not just verse straight into chorus. It's like the verse is kind of split into two parts, and so is the chorus. And it's everything just gets mixed and layered on top of each other simultaneously. And it's just such good construction and just elegant, as well as groovy and fun. And rocking.
Think about this. Patton does that guttural staccato delivery, and then he does the big soaring chorus. Think about bands, other bands like Linkin Park, say, where they have two vocalists, one to do the rap and one to do the screaming. Patton does everything.
That's a good point. And so many metalcore
bands have the clean singer and the screaming singer, you know, like Patton does it all. And for a new person, they need to be able to hear, oh, the same guy is doing this verse delivery, and then is this expansive soaring chorus guy. Like, You're right. He can play a part, and he brings cinematic quality and presence and impact. I just think it's a great song for an intro to Faith No More. What do you have for number four?
Okay. Well, my fourth one, this is the one, cause you mentioned, you know, a one to eat where you got to hear them going a little crazy, you know, and there's songs like Cuckoo for Kaka where they go super crazy, but that's not one you'd want to introduce a new listener to. So I chose Digging the Grave.
Okay. Can I tell you, that was the fifth song that I had for a little chaos, that I chose that over Gentle Art of Making Enemies. Continue.
God, we're gonna have to choose between Digging the Grave and Gentle Art of Making Enemies. Oh, okay, all right. Well, so what do you, are you gonna skip to number five, or are you gonna, when after I talk about this, or are you gonna, were you gonna talk about Digging the Grave?
I'll jump in and talk Digging the Grave.
All right, cool, man, cool. Okay, sweet. And we'll just keep it in mind that was meant to be your number five, and we'll have to place it later. All right, cool. Well, this one is catchy as hell with such a mosh worthy riff, but for me it is that bit at the end where Patton goes absolutely off the wall, loony up the cream bun and jam crazy with a scream that puts this song on a totally different level than any other normal radio player consumer friendly rock song. But you know, the song begins immediately. There's no preamble, no instrumentation.
Who needs anything? You just go straight into it. It's killer.
Yes, the whole thing just instantly begins, and the whole band is in from the first beat. And there's like, there's literally 2.5 guitar strums before the vocals come in, and it is heavy, you know, but not overly so to
Hard
the
rock.
Point where somebody would be put off by it. Exactly, exactly. And then the vocals just deliver hook after hook, and then they sort of bounce off the guitars super well as well. And this song's only 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it's just got, it's got it all. And that chorus, comfortable, you know, and that beautiful sung piece before, digging the grave, I got it made. It's so
good. And the riff, the guitar riffing really around it is killer, is really killer.
Yes, exactly.
No, I agree.
That's what I meant. Like, it's like the vocals and the guitars are bouncing off one another constantly throughout the whole song.
I agree with everything you just said. It's a hard rock song, but what makes it necessary to introduce someone new to this band, you need to hear Patton losing his mind. You need to hear screaming, just unbridled screaming. It's like, okay, guys, we've got 8 bars or whatever it is. It's only a short piece. It might be 8 bars or 16 bars or whatever it is. And instead of doing a guitar solo or anything else, Patton goes, guys, I'm just going to scream. Oh, like saying anything? No, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to scream. Like affectation or vocal. No, I'm just going to scream. Like
he's just going, blah. like this, and then immediately bursts right back into that beautiful chorus from that unhinged, completely wild screaming back to comfortable.
They keep it in the tight package of a 3-minute rock single,
exactly.
But gives you the kaleidoscope of Faith No More across hard rock, riff-tastic, incredible guitars with big choruses and kick-ass vocals. I just think, and then the screaming. I just think as a song, it's a must for a new person to hear. I think we... Yeah.
Well, to me, imagine how if it didn't have that mental scream at the end, it would be a different song. It would feel like a different song. It changes that 10 seconds or so, changes everything about that song. And it's just got, there's this nice light kind of hooky thing with the guitar. Well, not light, it's the wrong word for it.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's like a punctuated, staccato, interesting riff that it's got going, but then there's all these other alternative spices that come in with the mix as well. It's great.
Sometimes they use metal riffs, like really, you know, like metal riffs, but this is not. This is a hard rock riff, and it's it's just great to see that all the elements, all the ingredients in the soup bowl, it makes a unique Faith No More broth. It's wonderful.
But I think for the uninitiated listener, this song will get the person going, this is a bit heavier. It's not full metal, but it'll get you your ears prepped for those heavier songs that they do have.
Because this was my freak out. This was the one where I wanted the people hear Faith No More freak out version or Chaos. And, you know, I had Gentle Art was my other one, but I thought I wrote here maybe too much. I might be too much for a first person just with the, you know, the happy birthday fucker and the, you know, we're gonna kick you, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. So what do you think? Is it too much to have the mad, intense, crazy mental scream or like the really confronting lyrics of Gentle Art?
Let's wait to the end. I just need to let this one marinate. Okay,
we got to.
Yeah, the other ones that I thought that were good for a freak out.
Number four for you.
Just the other ones that I thought were great for a freak out were Got That Feeling from album of the year. It's almost sounds like he's having some kind of mental breakdown. It's a contender, but also too much like Cuckoo for Kaka. It's a bit too much for a first person. I really also like Surprise You're Dead
it gallops. One.
It has this kind of timing change. But again, I think Falling to Pieces and I Thought Epic were enough as well.
Plus, it's got that thing in that song, plus a bunch of other songs where like you got this mental laughing over the top of it as well that Patton's so good at it, you know, like like he's just laughs
like a lunatic
over the top. And that's what I mean by like, yeah, but that's what I mean, like it's cinematic, like he's doing something that sounds like it belongs more in the vein of acting than singing.
We know he touched on cabaret and film score and all that kind of stuff in other projects, you know, and you get why. Look, the fourth one, I said early on that it needed some kind of deep groove, and we've traversed many different angles of the Faith No More prism, and there's one yet we haven't turned, because my fourth song is Evidence, which is from King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. And this perhaps remains one of my favorite in the Faith No More canon. This song is sometimes my favorite Faith No More song. I just think this, if early on you had long-haired Patton with The Real Thing, and then in Angel Dust you had eyebrow ring, you know, shorter hair Patton with a goatee, you know, and then in King for a Day, this on this song, this is trouser wearing, silk shirt, pencil mustache, slicked back hair, cool crooning.
Yeah, this is Patton in his final form.
Final form Patton. People need to experience final form Patton. A little aside, if I may, Patton has shown us alternative 90s gents how to age gracefully and still remain cool in the way you dress. Don't just have long hair for your whole life.
And another aside, I sang this song in karaoke last night.
Oh, what a great karaoke song. Tough song to sing.
It really is. And you know what's good about it? It feels so good to sing.
Yeah.
Because you're like right down the bottom, and then suddenly you bust out with this. It almost sort of feels like a bit like a seedy kind of sound with all the wah going on and stuff like that.
Dim bar, lounge, seedy lounge, funk, soul, groove. There is no hint of metal. There is no hint of funk. I use the word funk, then I retract. This is the mood, the melody, the intriguing lyrics. It's soft, delicate chorus that he sings in his falsetto, got a taste of evidence. I love, the intro run with the killer bass line, the muted wah effect, the atmospheric synths. This is the perfect bed for Patton's smug, strong, rich voice to play on. And this song displays the nuance, the variety and the skill and the control of Patton's vocals. Like you said, this is final form Patton. I think this is an important angle. Listen to me, Leon, listeners. Guitar runs are so tasty. Tasty!
Mwah! It's so true.
The piano lines are so tasty.
But also understated,
absolutely
right?
Absolutely tasty. Mwah! Yeah. Understated.
And it's perfect. But it's understated and just it's exactly what the song needs at that exact moment and nothing more and nothing less.
Absolutely. And I just think it should be in the introductory five where people would think they hear these other hectic, crazy rock, synth, funk songs. They hear this and they go, is this the same band? What is happening?
Yep. That's a really good point. And just like we're going to have quite a time choosing between The Gentle Art of Making Enemies and Digging the Grave, my fifth song is going to probably have to contend to against Evidence. And that song is Ashes to Ashes.
Ooh, good song. Yep. Off album of the year. Yep.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's partly why I chose that over Evidence, even though I really had trouble choosing between them. But there's this really nice chunky sound to the guitar, but it's also really slow. It's really smooth and cruisy. And his vocal tone, he goes right down the bottom of his register and it is deliciously sounding.
It is.
Like that beautiful bassy sound that he gets. Then full contrast from that chocolate verse right through that crisp, rich, buttery, tenory sound of the chorus.
Yeah, it's big.
It lifts the whole song right up and then pulls it back down again. And it's this like a sultry rock, wonderful song that I think shows, like what you're hoping to do with Evidence, the different flavors that Faith No More can bring out and the different I think it just shows the variety that Faith No More can bring to the listener, and I think prepares their ears for some of those other more interesting, like weird songs, like I guess like Mouth to Mouth that comes before it, which is kind of like got a Middle Eastern sound, sort of thing, sort of stuff. It's not adventurous, but it shows the band can be very masterfully varying their tempo right down to suit the right idea. Oh, point the finger at me. It's on my head. Give it all to you, then I'll be closer.
here's the discussion points on this. One, yeah. I haven't selected any songs from Album of the Year, and I don't feel bad about that. Two, do you think that that Ashes to Ashes is a fundamentally better song than Evidence?
Oh,
or did you include Ashes to Ashes because you had three from King for a Day, one from if you had Evidence, you'd have three from King for a Day. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I see. Yeah. Yeah, that was, I guess that probably factored into it a little bit and stepped on my objectivity, I would say. But I love this song so much. And so I just felt that it needed some airtime as well. It's just such a good song. Oh, but I guess to the uninitiated, I guess what I'm doing is letting my subjective feelings about this song come into it. And I think Evidence probably belongs in place of Ashes to Ashes, as much as it pains me to say it.
Yeah. And on that front,
I think it's time to choose our five, isn't it?
Yes. To narrow down five, I like Falling to Pieces off The Real Thing. I like Midlife Crisis as number three. I like Evidence as four. And then we need to argue about Gentle Art of Making Enemies or Digging the Grave or both.
Yeah, but hang on. What's number two?
I had Epic. That's Falling to Pieces, right?
Then Epic?
No, well, that's what I would argue. I would say Falling to Pieces, Epic, and then you've got Midlife Crisis, Evidence, and either Gentle Art or Digging the Grave. I don't know.
Boy. Yeah, look, I'm happy with Epic as two over... Because I could argue that you'd leave Gentle Art of Making Enemies at two and Digging the Grave at five, but... I see what you're saying about Epic. It is pretty cool. And then you don't want too much like heavy craziness. Let's just talk about five. Let's leave those four.
Yeah.
And talk about Digging the Grave versus Gentle Art.
And do you know what? I would say either of those make the perfect fifth song for the uninitiated to Faith No More, given what we're trying to achieve here of experiencing the rock, the chaos, the unbridled screaming and the mental freak out that Faith No More can bring. So over to you, sir. I'm throwing that one into your
I'm gonna go for Gentle Art of Making Enemies over Digging the Grave.
Yes.
Because I think what happens is that the craziness isn't bound into 10 seconds. It is spread evenly across the song. And I think it gives the listener a much better understanding of how the craziness can be delivered. Like, there's some crazy moments, but then I think rather than saving all the craziness and bottling it up into like craziness squared, I think it's tempered and metered out. And I think it's in that sense, that one section may put a person off, maybe, but I think it's just better representative of the band. I think Gentle Art.
I agree. And upon first listen to that album, I remember when my mate, he got it the week it came out. And I remember going to his house and he goes, got the new Faith No More CD. And I was like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening through it and Gentle Art of Making Enemies was the standout track for me. And I guess thinking back,
exactly as what a happened new, to me.
A teenager, I was like, what is this? This is like gold. Yes. So
that's what I said like at the start, that like that song just grabbed me and just lifted me up and shook me around until I was like, okay, this is
do what you want to me, just do what you want to me, I love you. it's incredible.
It's great.
I love getting beaten up by that song. So in full summary, we have for the uninitiated to Faith No More, track one would be Falling to Pieces from The Real Thing. Track two would be Epic from The Real Thing. Track three would be Midlife Crisis from Angel Dust. Track four would be Evidence from King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. And track five would be The Gentle Art of Making Enemies from
King. Like it.
That's a tight five. Tight five.
That is fantastic. And what's cool about this tight five that we've just come up with, is that through just happenstance and circumstance and through no planning of our own, this just happens to be chronological in order.
Oh, yes.
With two from that real thing, then one from Angel Dust, two from King for a Day, and it just takes the listener through a journey,
of
the Faith No More spectrum.
Yep. You can hear early Patton sings a little differently, and then he becomes a better singer, I think. Incredible. There you go. And if you are a experienced Faith No More listener, let us know. Does that hit your tight five, or have you got a different tight five? We would love to hear from you. Now, before we head off, I need to hit you with a fact of the week. Are you ready, Leon? You ready for a Faith No More fact of the week?
Ready. I'm super ready.
Pretty simple. Did you know in the early period where Faith No More were cycling through singers and trying out different singers, that one Courtney Love was for a brief period of time the singer of Faith No More?
I have literally just discovered this. I don't remember even where I saw it, but I even saw a little bit of footage about this. And I just saw it this week. I just saw it this week, and it was somebody shared it somewhere, Twitter or something like that. I don't remember. And I was like, this is crazy. And there she is performing. It was some VHS tape that someone had dug up that I saw this footage of.
You saw Courtney performing with Faith No More.
It was a solid 8 seconds of footage.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, just this week I saw Faith No More with Courtney Love as the singer. And
strange I discovered to think that about.
Just this week. How weird.
There you go.
Yeah, well, hey, just on another aside, mate.
Sure.
I've got a bit of a listener contribution. Do you remember when we did our King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard versus and Black MIDI simultaneous in different
gig review field concert? Report. Yeah.
I couldn't remember for the life of me who the support act was for Black MIDI.
Yes.
And I was like, I think it's like, I don't know. Nancy,
I tried
somebody
to Google it and I couldn't find it.
I couldn't find it. Exactly. Me too. Well, some wonderful, intrepid listener who calls themselves Kirby with glasses on Instagram messaged us and said that this person is called Naomi Blacklock. And so I thank them
God
very
bless
much
you,
for
Kirby with
their
glasses.
Help. Yeah, it's so good. And so now I can actually look this person up and find out if they've got a discography or if they're on SoundCloud or something like that, and check it out for myself. And so too can you, listener.
Love it. We'll share something on our socials. So remember to hit us up on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'll put up some Naomi Blacklock. Was that the artist's name?
Yep.
Beautiful. Check out our socials. Tell us what you thought about today's episode. Send us an email at supersonicchat@gmail.com.
And I was super looking forward to discussing this band today. And I have to say, not only did it not disappoint, it went way beyond expectations. And dear listener, if you've had a lovely time like we have, blurt it out right now. Like right now, if you're in the shots, just shout it at the top of your voice. Say, I love Supersonic Chat Podcast. If you're driving, wind down your window and shout it to a passing motorist. And if you're at work, write a post-it note recommending our show and leave it
on
a workmate's
desk. No better if you're
on
the bus on the way to work. That's when I listen to podcasts. If you're on the bus, just turn to your neighbor and go, hey, mate, Supersonic Chat. That's where it's at.
Supersonic Chat, so good. And also give us a hearty review on your podcast service of choice.
Thank you, Leon. Thank you, listeners. That was another great episode of Supersonic Chat. Ah.